Okay.
Let's pray out. No, I'm just kidding. No. No, I'm just kidding. All right, tonight it is an honor and a privilege, man, really seriously it is, to introduce Daryl as our main speaker. So please give him a warm welcome.
I'm Daryl, I'm alcoholic. I'm grateful to be sober and have another day. It's good to be in me and Alcoholics Anonymous. It's good to be anywhere. You know, I tell you right now, I'm not a speaker, so if you get mad, you're mad at Billy. He asked me to come up here. if you come here to laugh and hear, you know, funny stories, and you know, you're probably going to be disappointed because I'm not a comedian, you know, and I'm not an entertainer. I'm an alcoholic and I'm a dope fiend, and I'm graced by God, and it's that simple, you know. I started drinking when my first drink was at 9 years old, and by the time I was 12, I was a full-blown alcoholic. By 16, I was doing dope. By 17, I was slamming cocaine, eating hallucinogenics, and smoking PCP, and hanging out in parks. I never developed, and I have no social skills. I don't know shit about school. I don't know shit about sports. I don't know shit about you. I'm getting fucked up. Excuse my language. That's all I know. From as long as I could remember, every day, all day, was about getting some more, you know, whatever it was. And being young, I didn't have a means of financial stability, you know. So they brought in extracurricular behaviors, you know, to finance my intoxication. That being said, I spent a lot of time in juvenile hall, boys camps, reform school, YGC, Joplin, Los Pinos, all over Orange County and LA County boys camps. That's what it was like for me, you know. At 18 years old, just before I was 18 years old, my father was diagnosed with cancer, and I came home to stay with him while he died. And he died in my arms at 18 years old from brain cancer. And it's weird, I'm working on a job right now down in Santa Barbara. I'm doing an off-campus office for Westmont College. And I don't know if you know what Westmont College is, but it's a prestigious college. But there's this HVC guy working there, and we're talking, and I'm like, hey, where you from? He says, oh, I'm from Anaheim. I said, yeah. He said, yeah. I said, what part of Anaheim? He goes, Anaheim. I said, what school you go to? He goes, Lower. I'm on Lower. He's on, yeah, Lower. Why? I said, well, I went to Magnolia. And like, when we lived in Anaheim, there was a street, Guanita Lane. And if you lived on this side, you went to Magnolia. And if you went on that side, you went to Lower, you know? And we started talking, we knew all the same people. His name's Amos. And I'm like, how the fuck do we not know each other? You know? Because I'm dropping names, he's dropping names. And I'm like, you know, we're all in the same circle. And he brings up this dude. He says, hey, man, do you remember Jack? And I'm all, Jack Bryant? He says, yeah. I said, yeah, I remember Jack Bryant. I said, he shot Brent Ryder, blew his head off. He goes, yeah. I said, yeah, man. I said, you know, man, they were out partying one night, man, and they came home, and this was in senior year. They came home, and Jack went in the house, and Brent went to get in his car, and he had left his keys in Jack's car. So he came back, he knocked on the door. Jack didn't answer the door, so he walked around the outside of the house, and he went to jump up on the bedroom window to yell at Jack, and Jack shot him in the face with a 12-gauge shotgun. And then he ran outside, and he drug him in the bushes, and he jumped in his truck, and he split to Mexico. Brent Ryder was a really close friend of mine, you know, for a long, all through elementary school. The point that the more I'm getting to, the day my father died, I'm in the shower getting ready to go to Brent Ryder's funeral. You know, his funeral's at like 11 o'clock, and I'm getting ready, you know, I'm gonna go pay respects to my partner. And I come out of the shower, and we had a nurse there, and the nurse tells me, she says, "Hey, Daryl, you better go sit with your dad because it's time." And I'm like, "Not today, you know, not today." And I go and I sit with him, you know, and his eyes was glazed, and the sound of his, I'll never forget that sound. If you ever heard somebody die, you will never forget the sound of that breathing, you know, the gurgling of death. And I held him, and I stroked his head, and I remember looking at the fear in his eyes. And my dad was not afraid of shit, you know. He was a World War II veteran. He fought in Okinawa, Japan, one of the fierce Pacific battles of the World War II. He finished out his tour in the Philippines, and he came back, and he was a fucking oaky-ass redneck, and he was down. He had heart, you know. And I remember seeing that fear, full of fear. And it freaked me out. And he took his last breath, and I laid him down. Talking to this guy at Santa Barbara brought all that shit up, you know what I mean? And I'm thinking, fucking, I gotta go speak this weekend. you know, man, but you know what, today, people, I don't have no guilt or shame behind my father. So when my father died, fuck, I was riddled in guilt and shame because I was in the heart of my addiction and alcoholism. I was not a good son. I was a piece of shit, you know? And he never lived to see me change it, you know? And that was a major key for me. That night when he died, I took off and I laid him down, and I remember telling my sister, you know, I got to go. And I went out, I jumped in my truck, and I jammed over to the church, St. Mary's Church, for Brent's funeral, and I sit down, and I'm sitting in the pew, and this chick, Robin's sitting over here, and she looks at me, and I got tears rolling down my cheek, and she's all, "Hey, D, what's up, man? I didn't know you guys were that close." And I looked at her, and I told her, "My dad just died." And she's all, "Oh, I'm sorry." And I looked at her, and I looked up, and Brent was in the casket up there, and I was like, "I can't do this, you know?" And I got up, got in my truck, and I took off. And I went to my house, and I'm standing in my front yard talking to my sister, and a buddy, Steve Hughes, rolls up in his Mustang. He's like, "Hey, D, get in." So we get in, we go out to the beach, get a case of Old English 800. Damn it, you know. Smoking some dope, drinking some Old English 800, and nighttime comes, I'm starting to get numb, I'm feeling good. And come back into town, I hook up with this guy, he says, "Hey, we're having a party over in the motel, you want to come over?" I'm like, "Yeah." So we go over there, you know, there's a few brides in there, and some of my homeboys, you know, and we're doing our thing, you know, and this one guy, Sean Cocker, knows you. I've known this guy since, you know, I don't know, fourth grade. And he's all, "Hey, D," he's all drunk and gout out. He's all, "Hey, D, man, hey, D, I'm sorry about your dad." I'm like, "Yeah, bro, it's cool, you know, thanks." About 10 minutes later, he's all, "Hey, D," "Hey, bro." You know what I mean? Because I'm starting to feel good right now. I'm like, I'm finally getting numb, man. All the anger and hurt and pain and feelings, emotion, all that stuff is starting to subside. I was getting a good buzz going, and he's really messing up my high, you know? And about the third time, he come up, and he's like, "Hey, D," I just turned around. I said, "Bam!" And we're rolling, you know? And next thing you know, we're out in the parking lot of this motel room, and I had hair down to here, and he's ripping my hair out by handfuls. And it's blowing... And I took a buck knife out and I stuck him. And I took off. Three months later, they found him dead on the railroad tracks. I never got to change that. I never got to correct that. You know? Those were major things that affected my life, you know. So my father died, I went and I stayed with my grandmother for a while. And I was, you know, doing my thing. And couldn't get it together. And from my drinking and using, I developed hypoglycemia. I was passing out. And I was scared. I was scared, man. I would like go into convulsion, hit the ground. I looked like one of them wind-up toys that you wind up and sit on the table. I hit the ground and just, you know. I come to and they'd be trying to get my tongue out of my mouth. And this guy that I used to run with as a kid, you know, he pops up and he's like, "Hey, how you doing?" I said, "Dude, I'm afraid." And he says, "Well, what's going on?" And I told him, and he says, he got saved. You know what I mean? He was like, one day he was carrying guns and fighting and hanging in the streets and doing dope and drinking, and he got saved. And he's carrying a Bible and he's talking about Jesus, you know? And we all thought he just like took a dose too many. You know? Like, he lost it. You know what I mean? But he told me, he says, "You know, Daryl," he says, "God wants to help you." And I'm like, "Don, you know, I don't buy that. I'm not into that thing, man." He goes, "Nah, bro, I'm telling you, man, God wants to help you. He wants to change your life. And he loves you." And I said, "You know what, man? I don't believe that like you believe that. You know?" And he says, "You know what, man?" He says, "Will you do me a favor?" I says, "What?" He says, When you go back in the house tonight, when you go to bed," he says, "why don't you ask God to reveal himself to you in a manner that you can understand?" And he said, "Would you do that for me?" I says, "Yeah, I could probably do that, you know." And so I go back in the house, man, and you know, night time come, I go to sleep, and I'm laying on the rack, and I'm all, "You know what? Hey, God, if you're real, like Don says you're real, because I don't know if you are or not, you know, I know what the Bible is, I know what God is, I know what Jesus is, but I don't know. I just have a concept." I said, "If you're real like he says you is, then show yourself to me. You know, reveal yourself in a manner I can understand, nothing happened, you know." So the next day he calls me, he says, "Hey, how you doing?" I said, "You know, just doing the deal." He says, "Hey, did you do that last night?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "And what?" I said, "Nothing, man. I wasn't really expecting nothing, but nothing." He says, "We'll do it again tonight." I said, "All right." The next night come, man, I do that. You know, I'm laying in the rack, and I'm packing a bowl, you know. And then, and I'm getting ready to hit some skunky bud. And then I stop for a minute, and I set the pipe down, and I'm all, "Hey, God, If you're real like Don says you are, reveal yourself to me in a manner that I can understand. Make yourself known to me because I want to know you." And I tell you, people, sure as I'm standing here, a fragrance filled the room. And I felt like a warm blanket came over me. And it just held me tight. And that's all it was. No, it wasn't no burning bush, no lightning, no, "Hey, Daryl." I just got that warm, fuzzy feeling, and I haven't smoked the shit yet, you know what I mean? And I remember the next morning, I got up, I called Don, I said, "Bro, you got to come pick me up, I got to go to church." You know, and he's all, "What? Who's this?" You know? "What? You got to come now, you know, come get me." I never experienced nothing like that. I'm like, something's wrong. I'm losing my mind. God touched me, you know. And then that was in 1980, at the end of 1981. And I would like to say that, you know, I went on to have some pretty miraculous experiences with God and Christianity. But I didn't stay sober, you know. I didn't stay sober. I lasted about 6-8 months sober. And I found my roommate dead. And actually, it was Don's brother. And, he came home on bootleg Quaaludes, man, was gouged out of his mind, and I prayed for him. And he got on his knees, and I put my hands on him, and I asked God to bring him home and give him peace and give him rest, man, and to put the Spirit of God in him and to revive him and rejuvenate him and to bring him one with his Creator.
And I tell you, when Jim got up off the floor, he was radiant, man. It was like he wasn't even loaded. And I watched God do a mighty powerful thing that day. And he laid down and he never woke back up. You know, I found him at 7:30 in the morning, solid purple. And I straightened out his arms and his legs and I called 911. And I watched him beat his body trying to bring him back to life. And he didn't make it, you know. And I got freaking angry because I didn't understand. I didn't understand, and I blamed God for that. And I thought, you know what, I'm never praying for nobody again, you know. And if that's what you're about, God, kiss my ass. I'm out of here, you know. And then I went way off the deep end. And I caused a lot of pain, misery, and devastation and destruction until I ended up back here again in Alcoholics Anonymous one more time, you know. And there's a lot of death in my story. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on and on. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew a lot more about dying than I knew about living. I know shit about life, but I knew about dying. And I knew how to turn and walk away, you know. Not me. I got mine, you know what I mean? Fuck that, I'm breathing, you know. But by the time I got here this last time, I didn't feel that way, man. By the time I got here this last time, I was like, why? Why am I still here? Everybody else got to get out of here. Why do I got to do this shit? I'm 116 pounds. I'm dying under a bridge in Santa Barbara. My wife's trying to take my kids away from me for permanent for the rest of my life. You know? Ain't nobody give a shit about me. Ain't nobody going to care about me dying until my body starts stinking. And the other guys living under the bridge going to want them to come get me out of there. You know what I mean? And I'm like, why am I still here? What? Praying for death and it ain't coming. My eyes open up and I'm like, another day. Another day. That's a disease. It has a primary purpose, man, to take everything out of us and to create total darkness, which I like to call an eclipse of the soul, drive you freaking insane, and then take your life. It's not a game. The game was in junior high school. You know? Sixth grade, you know, throwing dice, you know? Hiding behind the gate, smoking, burning the joint. This shit gets real, man. The disease progresses, and it progressed with me. Extremely. There was nothing good about me anymore at the end of my drinking and using. There was no light in me whatsoever. I didn't have the ability to have empathy or compassion or to give a damn about anything. How do you go from that to this? How do you go from that thank you God, man. How? You want to know how? You. That's how. How do you go from that to this? You. You people took a hopeless, broken, beaten, useless human being, and you reformed him back into a man. You taught me how to live, because I didn't know how. And you know, I celebrated 25 years of sobriety yesterday. And I hope that impresses you. You know, I hope you want that. I hope you're sitting here and you go, fuck, I want that. Because I remember when I was in L.A. and they called me One Day Daryl because I went to a meeting in Huntington Park every fucking Tuesday, and every Tuesday I had one day. And the guys would be like, I got 5 years, I'm going to fuck you. You know? They used to crack me up because they'd be like, welcome. Come on in. You're just like me and I'm just like you. I'm like, you ain't fucking like me. You just told me you had 7 years. I don't got 7 minutes. And I ain't sharing.
You know?
How do you go from that to this, people? How do you go from that to this? My life today? I am so overpaid. It ain't fun. I don't even have the right to feel bad in my life today. I start to whine or cry, I'm like, shut the fuck up, bitch. Don't even go there. You know? You got the audacity? You know, man, I got this house out in Orchid, and I remember when I bought that house, I was like, they ain't gonna want me in this neighborhood. And I know as soon as I move in, I'm watching out the front door, because I know they're coming, you know what I mean? I remember I got my first car. I went in and I finagled with Jim Freeland Ford, because I'm not shit, bro. I come to Santa Maria with an old Army surplus that I stole from the Salvation Army in Santa Barbara with two dirty pairs of pants and three pairs of socks, four cigarettes and 30 cents in my fucking pocket on the Greyhound bus. And I bought that truck and I brought it home and I said, parked it in front of the house I had on Cook Street, and I opened all the windows and I kept waiting for them to come get it. You know what I mean? But they ain't giving me that. I walked into a bank. I remember I joined the Alamo Club when it was on Cook Street, because they told me, if you join the Alamo Club, you can become a member of the credit union. Oh, fuck, I'm going to be a member of the credit union. So I joined the Alamo Club. I go down, they gave me a checkbook. I'm like, I never had no fucking check. I don't have a right to check. Now I'm a professional check cashier. I love cashing shit. I don't know, people, man. How do you go from that to this? Can't be done. Humanly impossible. ABCs. God couldn't would if you were soft. That's the key. God couldn't would if you were soft. How do you go from that to this? God couldn't would if you were soft. That's what I do in Alcoholics Anonymous, people. I see God. Alcoholics Anonymous is not a religion to me. You don't see me running around with a book and a highlighter, and I see them, you know. Not me. And I'm not putting you down. You know, knowledge is a good thing. It's not me. It's not a religion to me. You know, I believe in Christ. I don't say higher power. Higher power is for people that don't believe in Christ. You know what I mean? I believe in Christ. And it doesn't bother me if you don't believe in Christ, so please don't let it bother you that I do. Okay? I'm not here to convert you. Don't get nervous. I will not throw water on your nut. That's another story. God couldn't would if you were soft, man. Yeah. The only way to take a broken human being in slavery to drugs and alcohol and turn them into a productive member of society is a spiritual awakening, which is what is the foundation and the purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says in our book, the primary purpose of this book, these steps, all this stuff that they wrote in here, the primary objective is to lead you to the belief in a power greater than yourself that can change your afflictions, that can help you with your alcoholism, that can restore you to sanity, that can help you build a stable, sane life. It's the purpose. And then you get people come out of Alcoholics Anonymous, they go, oh, I don't get the spiritual part. They get up here and they go, I'm Billy Bob. I'm alcoholic. And I got 20 years. life's good, and I was fucked up, and now I'm not, and life's great, and everybody likes me, and I like everybody, but I don't understand the spiritual part of this program. What? How can you not? It's the whole thing is. That's what the purpose is. People, I don't want to talk about God. Then you don't want to be here. We talk about God here. If you don't like that, go try acupuncture. They don't talk about God over an acupuncture. They stick needles in your ass. And of course, I'm going to say this. I better do this now before I piss people off, because I have a tendency to piss people off. I am not a people pleaser. I'm a people pisser-offer. But the things I say are based upon my experience and my opinions. They are not necessarily the opinion of Alcoholics Anonymous. So do not judge Alcoholics Anonymous by what you hear from me. Okay? I've just been here for a few 24 hours, and I have some experience at what I'm saying that backs what I'm saying. So that is the purpose, man, because I could not crawl out from under that bridge on Salsa Cueta Street in 1989, 116 pounds, walk down the street, thought in my mind how I'm going to put my life back together and put it all back together and become a successful, productive member of society of my own self. I could not do that. The only thing was God. And you know what, man, there's been many times in this walk that I've, in the book talks about, it says we stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care of complete abandonment. You know? And I can't tell you how many times, people, I've been at that turning point asking for his protection and care. Asking for the ability to abandon myself totally because I'm afraid and I don't know what to do. Again. You know, people think, oh, that guy got time, he got an old lady, he got a house, he got money. Man, you know what, sometimes the alcoholic who suffers, the guy with 25 years. The chick with 15 years. The dude with 7 years. And not just the newcomer, people. You know, I got 25 years, I'm no damn different than you. You got one day, we the same. We got today. I got 25 years of experience of doing this thing, and that, you know, I'd rather have that than have one day, you can guarantee that. But it doesn't know that you people, time don't mean nothing. Your fucking time better mean something. Because I'll tell you right now, the time that you got in recovery doesn't mean nothing, you're about ready to give it up. You know, that's my experience. It better mean something. My time means something to me. But it doesn't make me better than you. Just means I got here before you and I've done what was necessary to stay this long. You know? And if I don't continue to do what's necessary, then I'll be back here asking you to sponsor me. Heaven forbid that. Like they say, be nice to the newcomer because you might have to ask them to sponsor you someday. And I've seen that happen in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? Because we get self-delusion, man. People with time, man, we get caught up in self-delusion because we think we got this shit. You know, we get busy with the honeys and the monies and the doing this and doing that. Life's going good and the house's going good and the kids going good. Everything's good. And we get complacent. And next thing you know, man, the disease of alcoholism and the disease of addiction is alive and active in our mind, even though we're not drinking and using and our behaviors are out sideways. And I'll tell you, in 25 years of being clean and sober, I've had some sideways fucking behavior, you know, from gambling to lust. You name it, I've done it. And I'm grateful I didn't have to get loaded over it, you know, and caught a handle on it, you know, because I stood at the turning point again, afraid, you know, and God said, come here. Because there's one thing, you know, I don't walk a straight line, people, I ain't perfect, you know, I'm a broken person. Alcoholics Anonymous has put me back together to the point I am today, you know. The God of my understanding has given me a renewing of the spirit and a renewing of my mind, you know. And today I walk with dignity and integrity. I got self-esteem, you know. You're not going to beat me down. I'm not afraid of you, you know. And I'm not talking about tough guy afraid, because that's a different thing. You're not going to hurt me. What the fuck can you do to me? You know what alcoholism and drug addiction has done to me? What can you do to me? You know? I'm not afraid. You know, people, when I'm praying today, you know, and I'm asking God, you know, God, Thank you for all you've given, all you've taken, all you've left, because I know that it's all necessary for my spiritual growth. I don't agree with it, but I understand it. You know? You could have left some, and you could have not gave some. You know what I mean? But I get it. And then I asked my God, I said, what do you want from me? You know, because I don't pray for, give me this, give me that, because I got everything. I don't need nothing. You know? I've already done that. God's already flourished me that way. You know? I asked my God, what do you want from me? And you know what he tells me? He says, Daryl, I want you to give grace. I want you to show grace, because I'm not good at that, people. I struggle with that, man. Fuck, I struggle with that. And I'm like, God, now can I just hang on to this a little bit? You know, I want you to give grace. I don't know if you know what grace is, but hopefully you do. But I'm going to tell you anyway, so you're going to know if you don't. It's unmerited favor. Which means we don't deserve it. And where that applies to me, man, is I got some resentments. 25 years in recovery, man. I've been wronged. I've been wronged, and I've had nothing to do with it. And I've had to take the hits and carry it. You know what I mean? And at 20 years of recovery, I changed my playmates, playgrounds, and playthings, and I walked. I'm done. You know what I mean? I don't agree. I don't like what's going on. I'm out of here. And it's not about you. It's about me. I can't do this no more. It's making me sick. And I got resentful about some things that transpired behind all that. And it's fucking justified. You know, I don't know about you, but I've never, me and Darren, we're friends and we talked a lot. You've worked with me for a while. And we both agree on this. I've never been angry that it wasn't justified. You know what I mean? I don't ever just pop up and say, okay, Mike, I'm pissed at you, bro. You know what I mean? No, if I'm mad at you, you did something. I'm a friend. Today, I know how to be a friend. And I'm the kind of friend, man, that I will step in front of you and take a fucking bullet. I'm that guy. You know what I mean? If I walk away from you, it's because you pulled some shady shit. And I'm not playing. It's not okay with me. And I don't give a fuck how long we've known each other. I've ended some 20 fucking year friendships, man, because I don't like it, you know? And it hurt, because I love some of these people dearly. And I inventory it, and I get mad, and I get yelled at God, and I'm like, nah, I'm going to handle this my way. And God says, all right, man, you go pay the price, I'm going to fuck it, I'll pay it, you know? I want restitution, retribution. There's a toll that needs to be tallied. That's Daryl. You know what I mean? That's what I am. You fuck me, there's a toll that needs to be tallied. You know? God says, can I just a little? Do I want to stay here? Do I want to be free? Do I want to have peace of mind, contentment, serenity? Do I want to prosper in the spiritual growth path that I'm on? Do I want to have a message of hope and love to share with people like you? Then I better find the ability to give that grace. Because if I don't, then I go back to that dark soul with no light in me. So, and if you think for 1 minute that just being clean and sober is the ticket, you're kidding yourself. Because I've been one dark SOB, clean and sober. You know, I've had some real sick shit going on in my head, man, and strapped down and sober. Grace, unmerited favor. I said, God, why? And he said, because I gave it to you. Because I didn't deserve it. Because I didn't deserve it. God forgave me, and I didn't deserve it. So So he says, no, I want you to do that. I stand at the turning point. I ask his protection and care of complete abandon. And I tell him I'm afraid and I don't know how. I don't know how because I'm fucking angry. I'm angry and I'm hurt and I don't know what to do. And if I keep the insanity going, I'm going to be loaded. Or I'm going to do something that I can't undo. And I can't go backwards. I've come too far. I can't go backwards. So I'm like, God, okay, what? Show me. Show me my cup, I'll drink from you. I'm willing. Since I got here day one, people, I've been willing to do whatever I got to do to stay here. I don't care what it is. You know? Richard G's my sponsor, man, and I will go to him and he'll say, do this, and I will go. Do it. Come back. What's next? Because I was beat into submission. My drinking and using was not a little minor inconvenience in my life. It wasn't a little owie. It was intense pain and devastation and destruction and darkness. So I ask God, how do I do this when I don't know how? I want to do that because I want that freedom. And he said, just a little bit. Just give a little bit. So I give a little bit, and you know what? I feel fucking good. That's how it works around here, people. You know, that's how it works. That's how it works. And you know, I have no darkness in my heart today, man. I have a peaceful mind and a calm heart. And I don't know about you, but I could never buy that. You know? I couldn't drink enough alcohol or shoot enough dope or smoke enough dope or eat enough acid, smoke enough PCP, huff enough fucking cannabinol to fucking get that calmness and peaceness inside of me. I couldn't do it. That's why I was inebriated. I wasn't a party. Before I got recovered, my vocabulary was like, go to a bar to pick up on chicks. You can't pick up on chicks with a you know? I love recovery, people. I love it. I'm living the dream, man. Rocking and rolling. And I'm grateful for it. Because I know. I know. Be gone like that. I know. I think about it. I set up, see, because I'm an old homeless guy, so I got an old camper and truck parked somewhere. Just in case. Because I ain't going back on a piece of cardboard in the green fucking trash bag. I did that. I ain't doing it again. So I bought a goddamn camper, and if I'm having me, I'm fucking sleeping inside. You know what I mean? My wife said, why you buy that? We don't go camping. I said, that ain't your business. Because you never know, man. You never know. I ain't sleeping. Fuck that. I remember going to the. They gave me 30 days at the mission in Santa Barbara. You know, but you had to not drink. Water and order. I couldn't go through with it. I make 3 days, and on the third day I'm walking up and I'm like, I'm sleeping inside. Give me a shower, get some wings and beans. You know, fucking, I'm living large. I had panhandled $10, I had a pack of cigarettes and a 40 of Schaefer, man. I'm all fucking up. I'm walking up the sidewalk, I'm drinking the 40, you know, got me fresh Taylor Mays right here, you know, Marlboros. Yeah. And I downed the Schaefer and I threw it in the trash can and I walk on through the door of the mission and the dude goes, hey, you. I said, huh? He goes, come here. You can't be here. So, well, no. I got 30 days. He said, no, man, you can't be drinking here. And I seen you drinking a beer and you threw it in the trash can. You need to go. And I was just looking at him like, dude, I'm sorry, man. I'm like, it's the rules. And I'm like, I got nowhere to go. I got nowhere to go, man. I've been smoking crack and shooting cocaine and eating whiskey, eating popcorn and drinking whiskey for so long, I got nowhere to go. And he tells me, he says, well, you can't be here. And I said, well, you got a green trash bag? He got me a green trash bag, and I walked around the corner on Salt and Plata Street, and I crawled up up the hill, and I laid in the concrete pillars of the bridge right there, and I wrapped up in that green trash bag, and I stayed there for quite a while. That was my home. How do you go from that to this? God couldn't would if you were sorry. If I live to be 100 years old, people, I can never, never repay what Alcoholics Anonymous and God has given me and done for me. You know, if I came every day to every meeting they had and I put $100 in the basket every day at every meeting they had, I could not repay what Alcoholics Anonymous was giving me. I'm going to share this. 9 years ago, I had a son. I have three kids. Three happiest days of my life was the 3 days my kids were born. I was there for all three. I cut the cord on all three. I washed the blood off all three, and I wrapped all three. You know what I mean? My ass is in Santa Maria because of my older two, because I refused to leave. My wife says, she said, if you go away and don't ever come back, I won't even come after you. I'm going to bring it on, bitch. You can make me not your husband, but you can't make me not their daddy, you know, and I fought for that. And but 9 years ago, me and my wife had a son. I'm married to a woman, and she's in the program, and she had 8 years when we had our son, and it was hell. It was hell. We had several miscarriages, and she had a killer immune system disorder, and it was, her body was killing the fetuses, and it just wasn't happening for us, you know, and we took it a step further, you know, and we went to we got a specialist, and we dealt with all the issues, and we did in vitro, and we did all this, and we got our son, you know, and he is a perfect boy. I mean, I'm like, fuck, what a gift from God for me, you know. But in the interim of all that, my wife relapsed. All the mental, I don't know. All I know is through all that, she relapsed. And for 9 years, it's been hell. It's been fucking insanity. One thing after another, those close to me and that have walked with me on this road, I've been doing this for 9 years. And then people look at me and they're like, man, why are you still here? And I'm like, it's my life. I made a vow. So death threw me apart. Don't make me kill you. I took a vow. I made a commitment. And it ain't like she just, you know, she would go out and get, there's so much behind it that I could not in my heart turn my back on her. I love that woman more than anyone I've ever known in my life, man. I've never experienced love like what I have for that woman, because I care more for her well-being than I do my own safety. And I've never loved anyone like that. I didn't even know I was capable of that kind of love. But I care more about her and love her more than I do myself. You know, I would gladly take the role for her and give her this. But it don't work that way. She got to get her own. And it's been rough on me, you know, but I've finally gotten to where it's like I can just love her, you know, and let her do her thing. And she's doing well, you know what I mean? And right now, man, I just feel really blessed about where I'm at mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, where I'm at with my wife and my relationship, where I'm at with my children, and I'm truly, truly grateful for where God has brought me right in here at this moment. You know, you could survive it. You people that are couples in here, and you both are in recovery, don't think that one of you can't relapse, because one can, you know. But I can tell you this, man, that you can get through whatever you want to get through if you're wanting to get through it, because there's people around here that can help you, you know. And I've got firsthand experience at that. And you know what? I haven't spoke here at this group in 9 years. Been 9 years. 9 years ago, I walked the fuck out. I was here. I got up. I said, I'm done. I'm alcoholic. I looked around the room. Oh, hell no. Gotta go. I said a few things. I bumbled a few things. I said, you know what? Be honest with you. I got somewhere else to be, man, and I'm going to go be there. And I walked out the fucking door, got in my truck, and drove off. And everybody out there was like, I don't think they ever seen nobody do that. They thought I was kidding. They were waiting for me to come back. My ass was gone, man. I got my truck going with. You know? But I had something else to do, man. That was more important, you know, because I had to take care of my family. And that's where I'm going to end at, is with my family. You know, I came into recovery because of my two oldest kids. And I've stayed here because I wanted them to have a father, you know. And I'm going to tell you something. I was so twisted and sick when I got here that I was so obsessed with recovery that I still lost my children. But I had to be to get better. And by the time I got better, they weren't kids anymore. They were adults, you know. And recovery did the same thing to my relationship with those two children that drugs and alcohol had done. It took me from them. But it was necessary for me to be here right now, people. And I've had to go to those kids and make that amend and tell them, I'm sorry that your dad was fucked up, but I'm here right now because of this. And my 9-year-old, I do not sacrifice him for Alcoholics Anonymous. I do not pawn him off to go do a function, or I'm not going to. I had someone tell me, well, don't you need meetings? I need meetings, but not at his fucking expense. You know what I mean? And why? Because I got it like that today. Now, when I was new, I didn't. I had to take my kids to meetings to get a meeting, but it ain't like that today. I can make my recovery around my child. My child is my priority because I've had my shot. I'm 52 years old. I'm on the downhill slide. It's my job as a productive, responsible parent to give my son every opportunity for him to get his shot. And that's my job here. And that's what God has set forth for me to do. And I'm fucking doing it. You know? And people don't like it, that's your fucking problem. Call your sponsor. I will never walk away from Alcoholics Anonymous in recovery. I will stay here as long as you guys will let me stay here, because I don't ever want to drink and use again. And I've never been involved in anything in my life that ever made me think it was possible for me not to, except for Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous today, let me tell you, if you're willing to come in here, sit down, tell the truth, and do some things that you do not agree with, your life can change. Thank you. I'm Daryl. I'm my caller.
All right. Let's thank Daryl and Tom again, please.